Okay, so you, yeah, in, on the structure itself, if you do this development, are you doing requirements for towards leads or something like that, so?
We have lead guidelines right now, but they're not mandated. So certain developers may choose to build following lead guidelines, but it's not mandated in NCO right now.
No green build is mandated.
It's not mandated right now.
Okay, well, look at that, it's fixed. I really never thought this was going to happen, so thank you.
Well, I do not know how to do it, and you know, I wouldn't have bet you a dollar and a nickel on a nickel that would be fixed. So I'm delighted now that we'll be able to have the full presentation from Brian Cole, who is going to talk to us about how transit funding affects health from his case study in California. And as many of you met him yesterday, he's with the Health Impact Assessment Group at UCLA School of Public Health.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge our funder, the California Endowment, for this particular project, and our principal investigator, Jonathan Fielding. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. The policy that we were looking at is a diversion of $1.3 billion of state funds that were collected through the state gas tax that were originally targeted for transit funding. And in last year's state budget, Governor Schwarzenegger proposed reallocating, different people call it different things, some people say cutting, he called it reallocating, transit funds from transit for the general fund so it could be used for other things and help balance the budget. This came, I don't have a slide on this, but this came on the heels of the voters passing $13 billion worth of bonds to support expanded transit infrastructure. So Schwarzenegger said, you know what, you transit people, you got a lot of money already. We're going to take the money that you had previously and use it for other things, schools, jails, and other state priorities. The problem with this is that the language that the was given to the voters for passing these bonds was specifically that we're going to expand transit services, not keep them the same and use the money for something else. But this is how the state budget operates. This was the previous year's budget, the budget that was just passed a couple of months ago. They did the same thing again. So this is a continuing issue that comes up again and again, this diversion of monies that we see at the state level. This coming year in the state of California, we have a much, much worse budget, and not just the $1.3 billion, but probably additional money is going to be diverted for other state services. It also has relevancy because in the light of these state cuts, local agencies are grappling with how do they balance their budgets, whether it's their county general fund or the transit providers' revenue sources. How do they find the money to make the county run? Hopefully, they'll have buses and trains and things too. Maybe not. So that's one of the things that we look at. Also, in the federal government, we have coming up here very soon reauthorization in Congress of what they call safety lieu. This is the omnibus transportation bill, and included in it is transit funding. How much we'll have to see. How much money will there be for transit? How much of a priority should it be? What we're trying to do with this health impact assessment is bring information about the potential health impacts to the table so that decisions are made with everyone's eyes wide open. When we got into this particular health impact assessment, the train was well out of its station. We didn't have any dreams of changing the decision in that particular case. Hopefully in the future, this information can be used to modify other decisions about state funding of transit. And another goal of ours was to show that there's a lot of ways that childhood obesity in particular, obesity, physical activity in general, are influenced by different policies, transportation policy, economic policy, education policy, and we wanted to use this as a case study to illustrate those kinds of connections. When we're talking about transit funding, we're talking about funding a lot of different things. We're talking about funding infrastructure for trains, train operations, bus operations, and also bus infrastructure. Here we have the bus stop to nowhere, which, that's in Atlanta. Great for those of you. Yeah, the CDC people love that one. This is a budget breakdown that we used in our health impact assessment from 2 years ago. It was the data that we had available when we did this this health impact assessment. We asked the question, okay, $1.3 billion, what is that going to be used for? And here's a breakdown in the state budget. So this is the whole state transportation budget, a total of, so 2 years ago, it was $6.6 billion. And yeah, I used to think that 6.6, that's a big number. But when we're throwing, you know, $700 billion now, it's like, yeah, this is nothing. Of the whole transportation bill, transit makes up about 10%. The biggest chunk of transportation funding goes to highways, and then transit of the $6.6 billion. That year, it was $686 million. This was double. So in that next year's budget, the whole figure was supposed to be doubled. This was when there was the big spike in gas prices, and the revenue from the gas tax was pouring in. And transit people thought, wow, we're going to be able to do so much, you know, expand the bus services in those rural counties, build some more train lines, make better connections, better bus facilities, more frequent bus service. Governor had different ideas. So this money is not spent by the state on projects or operations. It's given to local transit agencies. And this is where the analysis becomes very, very difficult, because different agencies use the money differently. Some are going to be using this state funds. This is the percent of their revenue for state funds. They may use it for operations. Operations means running those trains, running those buses. Or they may be using it for capital projects, for infrastructure, for building the bus stop to nowhere, for building the train tracks. And in just one case here, Los Angeles County, state funding only makes up 1% of the operations budget and only 6% of the capital projects budget. Most of the money is from other sources. Local means usually local taxes. Fares make up 24% of the operational budget, the revenue for operations. For other transit agencies, like the San Francisco Muni Line, state funding makes up 14% of operations. Now, I don't have them here because these are only the top five, the largest transit agencies in California. There's some smaller, especially rural agencies, for which state funding makes up a very large proportion of funding, of their revenue, maybe 3/4 of their funding. It's these agencies that are particularly at risk of cutbacks in services if the state funding is taken away. You take away, even though the number is big, this is the total operations budget for the LA County Metro Transit is, you know, over $1 billion. You take away 1%, they'll get the money somewhere else. But for that small, the rural transit agency, maybe their budget is only half a total budget is only $500,000, but almost all of it comes from the state. That cut is a big deal. Okay, let's skip through here for sake of time. We're going to come back to this again. So just to talk about some of the issues here and the analysis, one place where it really becomes difficult is we have to find out where current money is being spent. We have to find out if people are using the transit, because if they're not using, if you have transit and people aren't using it and you cut that transit that's not being used, there's not going to be any health impact there. And we need to know transit agencies' dependence on the state funding for their revenue. And we need to know the distribution of health risks. If the health risks are not very prevalent in an affected population, let's say people are already physically active, people already have very clean air, then transit is probably not going to make, cutting the transit is not going to make a large impact. When we do a health impact assessment, what we're trying to do is connect the policy there on the left with eventual health outcomes here on the right. So we have to analyze linkages in different places, the linkage between the policy and the proximate effect. So where does that money go? What is it used for? And then once you build transit or offer the transit services, we have to analyze what is the effect on those determinants of health, physical activity, income, social capital, and then those determinants of health. This we're moving now into what's common, you know, the more common research literature in public health. What is the connection between physical activity, income, social capital, and these health outcomes? We put that all together, and you're not supposed to be able to read this. And yeah, it's a logic framework. And so what we do is we use this for ourselves for analyzing the potential causal pathways, and then for each one of these lines in our health impact assessment, we kind of review the literature, we try and find out what are the specific effects for that population. We looked at air pollution. I'm not going to go over all the details here. I will summarize them at the end. We looked at water pollution. Most of the effects of water pollution are related to building roads. So if you have transit, you need to build less roads, supposedly. Noise pollution, all types of transportation, car, plane, train, bus, they do entail some kinds of noise pollution. The one exception probably is walking. Physical activity. Transit can affect physical activity in two different ways. It's important to remember that every transit trip is also a walking trip. You walk to that bus stop. You walk to the train station. You walk when you have transfers between different modes. Also, if you have more transit, it affects the shape of your planning. And we'll come back to planning here in a second. We have discretionary time. People using different modes spend time differently. People who travel in a car are spending their time very differently than people who are riding the train. And this is related to health in a lot of different ways, time for your family, time for recreational activity, and so on. Mental health. There's some very nice studies done in New Jersey relating the mental health of car commuters and comparing that to people who ride the train. As a car commuter, I can tell you something about that. Social capital, the connectedness in a community. Transit, especially train travel, has been shown to help improve social capital. Accidents and collisions. Cars, by far, more dangerous mode of transportation. Access and mobility. This is one area where we clearly think there would be health impacts from these cuts of the state funding. A lot for transit-dependent populations, even a small reduction in service can have very dire effects. Economics. This was a surprising one. That I think it's possibly one of the largest areas of impact There are huge multiplication effects. Every dollar invested in transit, especially transit operations, is spent over and over in communities. And for smaller communities, these effects can be very, very large. Economics, of course, translate into human health impacts. Let's skip that. Land use. It's hard to analyze transportation without also analyzing land use. Those two go together. And for anyone who's embarking on any kind of policy analysis in the future of transportation or land use, I would say you have to consider these two things together. Having transit in a place that is really sprawling is really different than having transit in a place that is very densely developed. But also, having that transit is affecting the shape of land use. At the end of this, we have kind of an analysis. For this bill to reduce funding, here's our synthesis. In most cases, because the transit agencies getting the largest cuts have other sources of revenue, we don't think there's going to be a large effect on air pollution. You're not going to get that many people off the road, or put, if you cut the money, get that many more people back on the road. Similarly, water pollution, noise pollution, in some cases, it could have some effects. Let's go down here to access. Like I said, access could be very severe cuts, severe effects in some places. Economics, again, in some locales where the transit is transit funding comprises a large source of income, of revenue, could be very, very significant. And I'll just conclude right there with this short statement from the Los Angeles Times. Does public transit exist to get people who don't own cars from point A to point B, or to get commuters out of their cars so they aren't clogging the freeways and polluting the air? Actually, an effective transit system must do both. At the heart of this, when you think about it, we're talking about equity. When we spend money, when we collect money in revenue and we distribute it, we are involved in decisions involving people's equity of public resources. And I think a lot of these funding decisions, we have questions of geographic equity, taking money from one region of the state, giving it to another region. And we have issues of income equity as well. And any analysis, any decision is going to be involving those questions of equity. Thank you.
Well, that was a diverse set of issues that people touched on, wasn't it? Really a wide array of different questions that can be addressed in some way by health impact assessment, or the people are working on health impact assessment, from mining to oil and gas development to transportation to a wide variety of things that you all talked about. So, the common theme in this session is thinking about these larger policy contexts that are different than the ones we talked about yesterday, locally based development projects and proposals and so on. And so, it would be good to have some discussion about what's unifying here, what's the trajectory overall, or where are we headed. And the questions that come to my mind are, I have three really. One is, What gains interest in these other sectors in this kind of analysis? In other words, how do you get the people who are doing the transportation interested in your health analysis, or people who are doing oil and gas? How do you get the people who are writing the sponsoring agencies for the EISs and so on interested, or the people that are the targets of these bills? Do you do that before you do the health impact assessment, or after, and what kind of strategies have worked for that? And then how useful is this? What would help move forward this kind of broader work on policy? Are there some connections between these different kind of approaches that we've heard? Or are there a lot of different threads that are just going to go off in different directions? That's two questions. That's probably enough. Those are the questions that are on my mind, you know, and of course we don't have to talk about those. But I'm the moderator, so I'm supposed to think of a few things. So I'd like to invite those of you in the audience to make your comments, or you can also ask questions, and then I'd also like to give the panel a moment for a concluding thought if they'd each like to make a kind of a integrating comment at the end. So we'll see how that works. Please. So the comment is whether there's any effort to develop an initial component or a model for a portion of HIA in various contexts that other people could use rather than start from the beginning each time. Would anyone like to speak to that? Anyone on the panel?
I think Brian could.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
think we just have this one mic.
Yeah. There's actually two answers to your question. One is, in a lot of these areas, in transportation, for instance, there are certain advocacy groups that do the groundwork to establish, you know, these linkages. And in transportation, they're Canadian. The Victoria Transport Institute does an excellent job of providing this kind of groundwork that people can adapt to their own local situations. More generally in health impact assessment, I think what we're trying to do, at least in our group, is to do some model HIAs in key areas, mass transit. So we did it for state funding, but hopefully it can be adapted very easily when, let's say, the New Jersey Transit is making funding decisions, or Congress is deciding how to shape the Safety Lou reauthorization. Recently, Los Angeles County Department of Public Health did a health impact assessment of menu labeling, and the goal was to give information to key decision makers to get some changes. Originally, their original version was done for LA County, but eventually it was scaled up to change state law, and now we have a state law on the books. But they wanted to put it in a format that is generalizable enough so other states, other localities can use that information without having to go through the whole laborious process of doing a health impact assessment.
Does anyone else wish to comment on that? Other comments from the audience on this point? Well, I guess you all are the blazing the path in this area then. Are there other comments or questions that people would like to bring up? Please.
Acceptance of HIA at the state level policy, what would be the kind of pitfalls of that, and is there a way to make it?
you should come and use the mic. Briefly, the question was about the making the HIA acceptable at the state level. Briefly.
The both the Maryland and California bills did not only look at local, but this was also for statewide planning as well. And so there was a dual approach. But your question is very relevant in the sense that the broader the jurisdiction, the more difficult it is, because you have more factors to address. For Los Angeles County, there are certain elements you need to make sure you're covering. And when you expand that to the entire state, then there's more elements. That just means it's more comprehensive, more complex, and more expensive. I do think that it's there are going to be certain instances when an HIA is going to be extremely relevant. And I'm somewhat thinking about health disparities, but I'm also thinking about where that law takes place, meaning Massachusetts has looked at it. Well, that's much easier to deal with in the state of Massachusetts versus the state of California or in Rhode Island. And like the friend of mine commented there, he goes, I can see the entire state, my entire state from the fourth floor of my office building. So it's obviously a little bit easier in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maryland to have the parameters and be able to establish what kind of impacts you want to look at versus looking at the state of California or even the state of Washington, which has many different factors and interests. Not that they shouldn't be addressed, it's just that they need to make sure that those parameters are in place and that we understand what kind of goals we want to look at. Oftentimes, when they do an environmental impact assessment, back to Chris's comment, some of these organizations and these consultants that put it together, you know, they just gather data off the shelves and kind of brush it off. And you get more forced into that the larger the project is. So I think we just got to make sure that the, not that we have to make sure, that it's going to be applicable for certain instances, and in certain states it's going to be much more relevant than in other states.
I'm Jim Dale, and I'm a public environmental health person, but also I sit on a local planning commission. And all politics are local, all planning is local. And so it's nice to talk about health impact statements for light rail, like we're going to have in Denver Metro. But what cases I hear may be one building. Or we may look at a comprehensive plan, or we may look at a neighborhood plan. And so to me, when we say health impact, we should be thinking more about what format do we need to be putting in these plans to be promoting health, enhancing health. And so is everything complete streets to walkability to stormwater to green building to the whole nine yards. And so it's really nice to talk about trillions and billions of dollars, but if you're sitting on a local planning commission or you're sitting and doing a land use review that comes from the county or from the city, it's smaller than some grandiose thing was done in San Francisco or wherever you did to say we should or shouldn't have light rail. And so those are the tools I think we need at the local level. And that's some of the things we tried to apply in Colorado and Tri-County. I'm in Jefferson County, but for me, the Tri-County Health Department is one of the strongest at doing this because they have a planner on there in their health department.
Would you want to comment on that and maybe how what are now assessment tools could be
translated into management tools in a sense, or yes. Decision tools or something in a planning land management context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should probably call the
assessment
tool.
Okay. You might have to come up here. Yeah. I'm sorry, we only have one mic. You know, it's.
That's okay.
They're not. Usually, I don't think people have discussions. Well, this is the interesting part, right? So, I think we should be calling a tool assessment. Target a decision making, because that's what we meant to do with it. We just made it into a soundbite for the
various folks we were talking to who we couldn't go through that huge conceptual model with. So that is the idea, that within it would be assessment target and it would be for decision making. One of the recommendations, remember I said we put a whole bunch of them in hoping they'd all make it through, one of them was to go to the province, so it's our state equivalent, and set up a level playing field for what exactly you're talking about, so that each municipality isn't fighting individual battles, that there's some support at different layers. There is something that exists now, Places to Grow, right, Bhavna, and a position statement, policy position, what's it called? Provincial policy position statement. That's new, and it does allow you to hang what you're doing on some legislation at a higher level, but again, it lacks the teeth. It was like us doing, I mean, it doesn't lack the teeth, I should say. It's got density targets and that kind of thing, but it's kind of a chicken, playing chicken game to see are the municipalities going to actually meet them or not, and what are you going to do if we don't? So it's one of the first times that at a higher than municipal level there's been requirements set and an understanding that you're going to meet them, but it'll be interesting to see in the end if a municipality doesn't meet its density target, what's the province going to do? Because there really isn't a strong mechanism there for some kind of action if they're not happy. But what we did here from our planning partners when we were putting our council report together was go to these three ministries. One of them is Municipal Affairs, where planning gets its guidance from. Sit them down and show them what you're trying to do so that they can strengthen their legislation to better support you. So, but on that comment, I think like innovation often starts in small situations where there's a practical problem. 30,000 people a year, what are you going to do? They're going to need a lot of things that are not set up, and it's going to be a crisis, and it already is. So there's a violence prevention committee that we give staff to and assorted other things. So while we're swimming away here, upstream is where we need to be before they even come through the door. And so I think I hear your point, and we heard that too, that you need to go higher. But I think you need both things happening, because you need the practical situation to force the issue and get some practical solutions in place. And I went over time, didn't I, Amy?
Well, get in the eyeball.
No, I'm in, you know, it's my responsibility. You know what you're doing. So I'm going to take one last comment here, and then we're going to wrap up. I'll take two of you, if you're both very succinct. And before I do that, again, please fill out your evaluations. Please, they're very short, it's easy, we really need them. And I'll take two of yours.
Either that, or... there can be a huge change. I mean, Clinton's executive order 1994, which made environmental justice mainstream just overnight. I mean, and it hasn't been addressed at the federal level. We heard that. We didn't talk about it yesterday. It hasn't been really. Federal agencies, it may have been a discussion, but federal agencies really haven't addressed environmental justice issues as much as, you know, one would expect 14 years later. But something like that, and some of you may or may not know, Obama and another senator introduced a bill that would require health impact assessment in the entire country, which didn't pass, of course. But something of that nature can happen. So, you know, so I think I'm working for Human Impact Partners, and this is a new organization. This is an emerging field in the United States I'm running. So while I was listening to you guys, I wasn't gonna, you know, say anything. I wasn't gonna say, but because I thought a lot of things need to be thought through. You know, there are a lot of things, issues, and, you know, not the voice that we really do need to think about as a collective. So but at the same time, I really believe that change can happen just overnight, depending upon who you enlist, so we never know. So,
thank you.
This is a comment addressing the issue of a local policy. We, our state in Wisconsin, had a comprehensive plan, and each local municipal entity with any authority over planning had to develop a plan that included 9 points.
When
are you going home?
Tomorrow. What about you?
Sunday. Yeah.
pervasive. So it has to be kind of a
okay, thanks. Some of the stuff.
Can't get a screen. Got it. Good old escape button.